You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Most of the chapters in Lionel Shriver's latest novel, So Much for That, start with a listing of the amount of money in a Merrill Lynch account that belongs to Shep Nacker. Shep hopes to use the money, his life savings, to move his family from Westchester to a third world country where they can live on a dollar a day. But his dreams and later his bank account are devastated by his wife's announcement that she's been diagnosed with a rare and deadly form of cancer. Ms. Shriver is the author of 9 novels, including the best-selling We Need to Talk About Kevin, which won the Orange Prize in 2005. This book is published by HarperCollins. I'm very pleased that it brings it to our show today. Hello.
Hello.
The American healthcare crisis is in the news almost every day. When did you first realize that it was a subject that you would want to tackle in a novel?
I was reading a New York Times article about the fact that not only are the majority of bankruptcies in the United States caused by medical bills, but the majority of those people have health insurance. I was so shocked by that, and I thought, you know, that would make a good novel. And then I thought, well, why don't you write it?
Well, this would not be an issue for you right now. Don't you live in England?
I do, and that means that I'm covered by the National Health Service, which gets a very bad rep here, which I don't believe it deserves. My experience with the NHS has been very good. It's obviously got its problems, as any Western medical system does, but it sure beats what we've got here.
You still have family in North Carolina?
I have family in New York.
The novel is set in Westchester and in Park Slope, Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
Were you at all worried that a heavy subject might discourage potential readers? I guess you wouldn't be, because your most popular novel was about a Columbine-like school massacre.
Well, I have a perverse streak a mile wide, so I have a tendency to write about what no one would have any motivation to read about, but have a tendency as well to candy coat my subject matter, and I think I've succeeded in doing so this novel.
You mean because there's a lot of humor in the book?
Yes, humor is my favorite sugar coating.
As a way of getting past some pretty horrifying things here. Shep's wife, Glynis, develops mesothelioma?
Is that mesothelioma.
It's a cancer of the lining of the internal organs that's usually associated with exposure to asbestos. Why mesothelioma and not something more common like breast cancer or lung cancer? Melanoma.
I had a very close friend in late 2006 die of mesothelioma. And she was a metalsmith, as the character in the book is as well. And so using mesothelioma was a nice plot complication that has something to do with asbestos. I didn't really want to go on the campaign trail for asbestos, but I liked the fact that at least initially my character Glynis blames her husband, who was a handyman, for having brought the fibers back on his clothes.
Although two of the more famous people who had mesothelioma, Steve McQueen and Warren Zevon, were not working in construction or, as far as I know, had very little contact with asbestos.
It's sometimes very difficult to identify where you might have been exposed, because the gestation period for that disease is 20 to 30 years.
But you say that metal work will do it as well.
Yes, my friend would have been exposed probably in art school and perhaps earlier in her career as well, at which time things like the soldering blocks that you solder metal on would have had asbestos in them. And in fact, since I as well trained as a metalsmith, I may have been exposed to the same materials.
But less likely today. I'm hoping.
Yes. Metalsmithing materials would not have asbestos now.
You've described Glynis as a perfectionist who's reserved, hypercritical, and totally dark. She's reminded some reviewers of characters from your earlier novels, Eva Kachaturian from We Need to Talk About Kevin, Willie Nowinski from Double Fault, who've also been described as demanding and irritable. Do you enjoy creating female characters perceived as difficult or unpleasant?
Yes, I do. And I always enjoy characters who don't obey the rules. I like characters who reject the stereotypes of whatever circumstance they find themselves in. And in this case, Glynis will not be the gracious, loving, sick person who's philosophical about their fate. She is furious. She's only 50 years old. She has no business having a terminal illness. And she also becomes very ill-wishing toward other people and takes active pleasure in their misfortunes.
Schadenfreude.
Yeah. She loves Katrina, for example.
She's nasty to her relatives after they travel from Arizona to visit her in the hospital. She criticizes Shep, who's cooking and cleaning and caring for her.
You know, part of that is not just her intrinsic unpleasantness, but with her relatives, for example, they are driven to leave the relationship in a so-called state of grace. They want all the problems between the siblings to have been resolved so that, of course, if Gwyneth dies, then they will feel better, that they don't have to feel guilty. And Gwyneth isn't dead yet, and Gwyneth doesn't want those relationships to be tied up in a bow and therefore turned inhuman and something that they are not. And she is determined to keep the problem she has with other people alive because she wants to keep the relationship still extant, still alive.
My guest is Lionel Shriver. Her latest novel, So Much For That, is published by Harper. Would you read a little bit for us?
Sure. This is just a little passage. Shep is talking to his best friend, Jackson, walking around Prospect Park. It's very early in the novel, and Gwyneth has only recently been diagnosed, and this is Shep's first introduction to American healthcare and, most of all, to American health insurance companies. Gwyneth and I have always kept to a tight budget, trying to build that nest egg for the afterlife. We've waited for the two-for-one offer on shampoo, bought toilet paper in the economy size of 12 rolls, single ply, got the special on turkey burgers, even if we were more in the mood for steak. Now it's 500 for this, 5,000 for that, and they never tell you in advance what it costs. It's like going on a spree, and none of it has any price tags. We only pick up 20% in coinsurance, but that's after the 5K deductible.
I have my guest is Lionel Shriver, whose novels include the New York Times bestseller The Post-Birthday World and the international bestseller We Need to Talk About Kevin, which won the 2005 Orange Prize. Her latest is So Much For That, which is published by Harper. There are certain words we can't say on radio in America.
Oh, I'm
you can say
sorry.
It in England.
I didn't realize that.
So we'll skip some of the rest of that passage.
I could,
Well, anyway, let's talk about some of the other things in the novel. Although at its opening, Shep seems willing to leave Gwyneth to start his afterlife, which is what he calls his move mm-hmm. to inexpensive accommodations overseas. He gives up his plan when he learns she's sick and devotes himself fully to caring for her. Would Shep have considered leaving Gwyneth behind if she hadn't depended on him and his job for health insurance?
Well, Shep is a good man. I mean, he's actually one of the most virtuous characters I've ever crafted.
Did that make you feel uncomfortable, coming up with a man who's so nice?
It was novel, anyway. I rather enjoyed it. It was a nice change. Mm-hmm. And, he doesn't really want to leave his wife at the beginning of the book, but it has become a choice between his marriage and his loyalty to himself. He has planned since he was 16 years old to have this whole second life in the third world with his savings, and he doesn't want to end his marriage, and he's happy for Gwyneth to come with him, but he's going to go with or without her.
And he doesn't choose Mexico or Costa Rica, but Pemba, an island 50 miles northeast of Zanzibar, off the coast of Africa.
Yes, I wanted a place that was unusual, that most people would not have heard of. A little obscure, hard to get to, and as Shep observes, therefore hard to leave.
Interwoven in the story of Shep and Gwyneth is that of Shep's best friend Jackson and Jackson's wife Carol. They have a 17-year-old daughter, Flicka, who suffers from a severe genetic disorder. What disorder has Flicka inherited?
It's a Jewish genetic disorder called familial dysautonomia, and it's very
rare.
I've
never heard of it. Tay-Sachs, of course, is usually associated with, is the most common, I guess, Jewish genetic disease.
Well, you know, this is so rare that only 350 people in the world have it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But it's very unpleasant and work-intensive for parents. It's usually terminal, but kids who have FD, as it's called, are living longer these days. And I did some research on this disease. I interviewed a couple of teenagers who have the condition, and I talked to their parents.
And both of these illnesses have put real stress on marriages. In this case, the parents of the kid who has a very expensive disease because health insurance will not cover most of it. Jackson is a quirky character. He loves to rant and rail against the government. He's constantly coming up with new titles for a book he plans to write about how the rich take advantage of the middle class. Doesn't he become one of Glynis's favorite visitors after she's hospitalized because she enjoys those rants?
Yes, because she's so angry. She enjoys the presence of other people's anger. She feeds off of it. And so they make quite a good team for a while because, you know, Jackson comes to visit her at the hospital and says, well, what do you want? What would you like? How can I make you happy? And she says, just rant.
One reviewer speculated that you use Jackson to communicate your own ideas about American society.
Yeah, there is a little bit of me in Jackson, certainly.
Have you been following the healthcare debate in Washington?
Quite closely.
And what's your feeling?
I'm worried that we are going to end up getting something passed, but that it's going to be so diluted that it won't make a big difference in the long term, and yet it will keep us from revisiting the issue for quite some time. And I find that outcome unfortunate.
Well, one of the big stumbling blocks now seems to be whether any money should go into paying for abortions. It does seem odd that healthcare, which everybody agrees is a problem in this country, or used to agree until recently was a problem in this country, is being held up by something that has not been illegal until now, has been paid by insurance.
I know, and I'm completely dismayed by this. And it's a peculiarly American hang-up. Since I live in Europe, I have that little bit of an eye outside, and Europeans would find this utterly incomprehensible.
Shep dreams of living on a tropical island with nothing to do. Is that something that you could ever imagine for yourself?
Not really. And besides which, even Shep doesn't end up imagining a life of total idleness. He's a hard worker. He just wants he wants something different. He wants something simpler, more direct, more technologically crude, and more contemplative.
Were you surprised by the reaction you received in the press when it became known that you'd accepted a free vacation to a resort in Pemba?
Oh, that was a total misunderstanding. I was on a travel assignment, and it's routine for travel writers to be given complimentary stays at resorts, and some writer in the Sunday Times in London thought that that looked suspicious, and I had obviously...
Like product placement.
Traded a setting in my book for a free holiday, and... It was absurd.
Your Orange Prize-winning novel, We Need to Talk About Kevin, is being made into a movie, isn't it?
Well, you know, I am finally beginning to think that it is going to happen.
The director, who also wrote the script, is Lynn Ramsey, who's her film Ratcatcher was declared pretty much a masterpiece when it was released in this country, mm-hmm. and it won a British Academy Award in 1999. Tilda Swinton still scheduled to do the lead
role? That's right. And John C. Reilly is going to be doing the male lead.
Are you going to be involved in any way?
I intend to go to the premiere and buy a big bag of popcorn.
I've spoken to a lot of writers about what happens when they sell the rights to their book. They pretty much give up any control. And
you
for
really,
all you know,
you
the thing might be moved to, to Canada. And he might want to be going to Costa Rica.
But there's a relief in that as well when you don't have any responsibility. I mean, it's true that I don't have any artistic contribution to the film, but it also means that I don't have to take the blame if it's not good. And yet some glory will probably reflect upon me if it's excellent. So that's the best of both worlds.
Lionel Shriver's novels include the New York Times bestseller, The Post-Birthday World, the international bestseller, We Need to Talk About Kevin, which won the 2005 Orange Prize and has now sold over 1 million copies worldwide. She also writes for many different publications, too numerous to mention, when she's not writing novels. Her ninth is So Much for That. It is published by Harper. And I want to thank you so much for being on our show today.
It was a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Up next, Alan Larry Ubell, our gurus of how to, field your calls about home repair. You can be part of it by calling 212-433-9692, or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. This is WNYC and WNYC.org.
WNYC receives support from Austria, home to a 900-year-old monastery where a biomass furnace provides green energy. That's Austria, old and new. Learn more at experienceaustria.com. Roundabout Theater Company, presenting Barbara Cook, Vanessa Williams, and Tom Wopat in Sondheim on Sondheim, a musical theater event conceived and directed by James Lapine. Performances begin March 19th. Info at roundabouttheater.org. The Randall's Island Sports Foundation, working with the community to care for Randall's Island Park in the middle of the East River. This spring, Randall's Island hosts Cirque du Soleil's new show, OVO. Info at risf.org.
You have the power to help secure strong, independent radio for generations to come by including WNYC in your will, trust, or estate plans. A few simple steps on your part will go a long way to create a lasting legacy that ensures the future of WNYC. For information, call the Listener's Legacy Circle, 646-829-4587.
Hello, I'm Rosie Perez, occasional guest and perennial fan of Leonard Lopate. I hope you'll join me, artist Chuck Close, pianist Jason Moran, and lots of others at Music Memories and Mockery, a Leonard Lopate 25th anniversary roast, Thursday, March 25th at the Cooper Union. Tickets available on the events page at WNYC.org.
Joining me now are the gurus of how-to, Alvin and Lawrence Ubell, also known as Accurate Building Inspectors. They're located in Brooklyn, New York, and they've been regulars on the show. Well, Al, I've been here 25 years. We just celebrated my 25th anniversary. You were here before I got here.
Yes, with Marty Wayne. It was
the first host.
Yes, and he was when he first got on the show, he says, a home repair person trying to show people how to fix things on radio? How do you do that? But he tried me out one day, and then he says, I want you back. That was the beginning.
And I inherited you.
Yes, it was in his will.
And then I inherited Lawrence.
Actually, I like to think of mine as more of an adoption, but that's okay.
Anybody else?
No, I got people in the wings.
Yeah, we have somebody outside,
Yeah, we got people in the wings.